WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to another Monday Night Talk. Yes, my name is Kevin Tachi, and we have a great show lined up for you this evening. We'll right out of the box after traffic. We will be speaking with State Representative Matt Muratore. He's actually here, so we'll probably chat a little bit prior to Malcolm Alter.
Sounds good.
Telling us what's going on out on the roadways, but State Representative is here. He's one of many representatives that we have here on the South Shore that partake in this program, and we get a chance to, it gives them an opportunity, if anything, to kind of discuss what's going on, give the latest as to what they're working on in their district and what's happening up on the Hill and anything else. And that's, that'll be part of the State Representative. We got a couple of things that we're going to promote. One of our proud sponsors, Peter Brown, passed along a little information that we're going to chat a little bit about towards the tail end of the representative's segment, so stay tuned for that. Right around 6:40, we are going to speak with Braintree Mayor Joe Sullivan. We haven't had the mayor on in a bit, so we're going to look forward to speaking with Mayor Sullivan, kind of get an idea as to what the latest is going on in his community. Then after the 7 o'clock break, the second hour, we're going to speak with Huntington Elementary School Principal Mary Beth O'Brien. And we're going to talk a little bit about the 120th Memorial Day Parade that the school holds. It's hard to believe, but the school has been holding this this event since the late 1800s. So we'll kind of get an idea as to how it started and how it has maintained its tradition over the years. So she'll talk a little bit about that. Then we're going to speak with Norm Kelly, who is the founder of Software Quality Associates. And we're going to talk with him a little bit about something that he's part of, as they're going to award $1,000 to a Pembroke High School student simply because of, how can I say it? How she represents herself, as she has done a couple of things that have caught the attention of the organization. The organization, of course, is called Meta Student Foundation, Meta, M-E-T-T-A, which was actually created in October of 2012. And so there's actually going to be a ceremony later this week, and we're going to talk a little bit with Norm, and we'll even speak with the recipient, Miranda Harbinson. She'll be in studio with her mom, and we'll kind of get an idea as to, you know, how did this all come to be?
Nice.
Then, I know it's kind of odd. Right now, we're kind of in the realm of the conference championships in the NHL. Of course, the Boston Bruins didn't make it out of the first round, but we're going to speak with Boston radio voice Dave Gosher and get his take on the Bruins season and what he sees for the future of the team. So that's all coming up in just a few minutes here on 95.9 WATD.
Over the past, 10 years, Brennan Smoke Shop's customers have given thousands of dollars in spare change to our local charity, the Nathan Hale Foundation. That money has been used for the Nathan Hill Veterans Outreach Center and Three Hearts Farm Veterans Growing Opportunities.
Hello, a tip cup in a smoke shop?
No way, it's not a tip cup. It's our cigar box charity bin. Brennan's customers, I repeat, Brennan's customers have donated thousands of dollars to the Nathan Hill Foundation, a registered 501c3 located in Plymouth and Middleborough. I'd like to thank all of our great and loyal customers for giving so much to this great and worthy charity. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for helping us help our local veterans. Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and Pope's Island, New Bedford.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
So our first guest, gentleman who serves the 1st Plymouth District, State Representative Matt Muratori. Also, I didn't realize, a Red Sox fan.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I went to the Red Sox for Mother's Day with my wife.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. It was a good game, though. They won the game.
Oh, yeah. It was Mother's Day. Oh, wait, hold on.
We didn't go Mother's Day. We went Saturday.
Saturday.
Yeah, so we spent the whole day in Boston. Yeah, they won that game. That was good.
It was a good game.
Yeah.
And I was surprised that they were able to muster the offense that they did. But for some reason, they couldn't do the same thing on Sunday.
No. Well, they had Chris Sale's pitching. He's amazing. We were sitting right behind the bullpen, too, so he is tall. But he is amazing.
You know what's funny, though, is if you look at the start of the season on paper, this Red Sox team was supposed to be right there competing. Same with the Cubs. The Cubs, if you look at the Chicago Cubs right now, I wouldn't say they're like fourth in their division.
Yeah, it's early, though. It's early. They're only 4.5 games out, so.
Okay. Keep that up. But we have you in, as we do. I like to fondly call it the State House Report, whether it's a state representative, a state senator. Sometimes we have one of the constitutional officers, whether it's the auditor or the treasurer or even the governor, lieutenant governor. And we kind of chat about the latest news, what's going on. It gives an opportunity to talk a little bit about what's going on.
Sure.
It's basically giving you the bullhorn, like Eddie Perry does on on the mornings, the good, the bad, and the really, really stupid. But we give you, it's more of, you know, an idea for a different listening audience.
Sure.
So what's new at the State House?
Well, you know, first of all, thank you for having me on. You and I have never done this in person, but we've done it on the phone, I think, 3 times. Every time we've got together, there's been a snowstorm, and we've had to do it over the phone. So it's good to finally be in studio with you. So thank you for having me. Appreciate that. So what's going on at the State House? It's a little bit of a slow start. This is my second term, so now I know a little bit how it works. But it is a little bit slower start this time. We obviously did the budget on the House side. The Senate budget is coming out today through House Ways and Means, and the rest of the Senate tomorrow. And then they meet next week. And then there'll be a conference committee held on the budget sometime in June. But the biggest thing that's happening is the revenue numbers have not come in as expected. As you know, the revenue numbers are projected to come in a lot higher than they have. They're pretty flat at this point. So we're not sure what's going to happen with this fiscal year, and if there are going to be any changes in the budget from the Senate side, and maybe the House may have to readjust the revenue numbers for next fiscal year. So I think that's the biggest thing that's happening at this point.
But it seems as though there's a science to, you know, trying to predict the ebb and flow of your revenue stream that's coming in. But is it tougher because we have a new administration down in Washington? Or should that matter?
I don't know if that matters at all. I think it's really what's happening in this state, and you know, having economists involved to help us predict what that revenue number will look like. I think it was a little over 3.1 increase in revenue in this current fiscal year, and it's only been a little over 1. But who knows? I mean, unemployment is very low, so people are working, but it's not coming in. So it tells me, at least, that the economy is not as great that people really think it is. It's getting better. But it's not there yet. We're still not there. I think retail may have a lot to do with it as well. You know, you're hearing a lot of, you know, stores that are looking to close. A lot of people going on the internet buying retail now too.
Tough days for the brick and mortar institutions.
Yeah, it really is. So, you know, I don't know. You don't know.
From what the House is able to put together, What kind of assistance was your district? Could your district see or couldn't have seen, depending on when ends up happening with the state senate budget, and then of course the conference committee
where
they finally hammer that out.
Well, you know, one of the biggest things we were looking for is for the Plymouth 400. As you know, it's been a planning process been going on for about 10 years now. And we were looking for a little bit more this year because there is a state commission now that's been formed. So with Dusty Rhodes, who heads the state commission, the executive board of the Plymouth 400 with Terry Murray is on that executive board now, okay. The former Senate president, they helped put together a budget that was more than double than what we used to ask for. We used to ask for about $200,000. So we asked for $500,000 this year, and so far we've got $50,000 from the House side. And again, I think it's what's happened is the any of these earmarks that have been asked for by most communities all came in right around that $25,000 to $50,000. They try to give a little bit to everybody, but there's just not the money there to do that. However, I think with the Plymouth 400, we continue to work with them. They have a development person that they've hired now, and having the state commission in place will give them leverage to actually get more private dollars. And also, they're looking to do a federal commission as well. So I think, you know, having a private-public partnership, I think, will be fine going forward.
Well, and you kind of answered my next question, and that is where do things stand federally? I mean, what's being done by a legislative delegation down in D.C.? Are they trying to push for monies? As you may have heard during the selectmen's forum we had last Monday night, the individuals expressed displeasure that the state isn't taking this national. It's a national celebration, America's hometown. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's not America's, you know, 42nd hometown. It's America's hometown. It's a rock that says 1620, you know, came ashore. It's the, you know, the development of our country, so to speak.
Well, the government has really taken this on. And by naming a state commission, that was a big thing to do that. That took a year process to do that. But it doesn't mean that the state has to fund the entire commemoration.
Right, I understand it.
You know, so, but then the federal government has to be involved with this as well. And what happened in Jamestown is a majority of the money, the millions of dollars they got, came from the federal government. So we are working with the federal delegation, and Terry Murray again has been working, actually went down to meet with the senators down in Washington to talk about a federal commission. Because when a federal commission gets put together, then there's more resources that open up on the federal government as well as private as well.
Okay. When do you think you'll know the final numbers in regards to at least what we're going to see for fiscal 2018? Because again, you're less than 3 years out from this, you know, this big celebration. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of plans.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of plans in place that the Plymouth 400 Inc., which is a nonprofit, Ken DeVaris, who's the current who's the chairman of the Board of Selectmen in Plymouth, also runs this as well. And he put together a great budget with the team they have, Michelle Pecoraro, of about $8.9 million. And it's a very doable budget for what they have. Again, using the public and the public dollars to leverage the private dollars, I don't have any issues that we won't make it. I think we'll make it without a problem.
One of the other things that had come to light is in regards to the recreational marijuana law. Communities left and right are instituting a moratorium, hoping to push this off until the state kind of gets its house in order as to what's going to happen. But am I understanding that there might be a push to see if it could be a challenge to the recreational marijuana law, or is it a matter of checking to see its validity?
I'm not sure there will be a challenge to it. And what I'm hearing from the committee, the joint committee that's working on it, they're not looking to make maybe not too many changes in what the current law is, including the taxes, which I personally think that the taxes are we're going to be in serious financial problems.
Biggest sticking point for a lot of people.
If they don't change that tax number, if you look at Colorado at 27%, state of Washington at 35%, we've got to do something in Massachusetts to get that number higher than, you know, than the 3.5, the 10% that's there now, the total that's there on the ballot question. But, you know, I do think, you know, one of the things that has come up in many cities and towns, you talk about the moratorium. A lot of cities and towns have put a moratorium, which makes sense, until the state comes up with final, you know, figures and what they're going to do with this. And the Cannabis Commission is actually formed. I think that's smart. And some towns are actually just outright banning the pot sales in the communities. I know Plymouth tried that. They didn't go for it. This current Board of Selectmen did not go for that at this point, but many communities around have. The actual law allows for cities and towns to actually opt out if they'd like to. A lot of people felt that, the town of Plymouth voted 52-48 to have marijuana. Yes, but they didn't vote for that part of it yet. So we're hoping that, down the road that the voters of Plymouth will be able to at least vote on whether they want to have pot shops in the town of Plymouth or not.
Do you feel this confusion between medical marijuana and recreational? Because
I think there is. Yeah, I think there is in some way. Because people, I think, have been hearing all about the medical marijuana for the last, 3 or 4 years. And in Plymouth, they're just about ready to open. At the same time, this law comes into place. So I think there is some confusion about that. And it has nothing to do with medical marijuana whatsoever.
It's interesting you say that, because as I was going to say, I actually witnessed a community that had the discussion, the Board of Selectmen, they were going to put together a letter just to say that they were, they want to get public input, and then they were going to decide whether it was going to be okay to have a grow facility in the town for medical marijuana. And a lot of folks were coming out and were more nervous and were confusing it with recreational compared to the medical, and understanding that this is more stringent as to how somebody operates if it comes down to medical marijuana. How you can't just open and have big signs going, "Hey, we're selling medical marijuana."
Right.
Can't do that. It's not like that. There are the neighbor communities that have a similar setup that are actually operating, and you wouldn't know it if you drove by it.
Correct.
Unless somebody pointed out and go, "Hey, do you know what they're doing there?"
Correct. Yep.
And so that's why I asked you that, is because I know that there is confusion. I'm wondering if there is still confusion about it.
I think there's some of that confusion, and there's also the confusion of, well, we voted for it. We voted to legalize marijuana. It was a 6,000-word document. I doubt, 80% of the voters of Plymouth read that document, or a good portion read that document. Sure. But it does allow people to actually opt out of pot shops if they want to. It wouldn't have been put in if it didn't allow the people to vote for that.
What else is new in the district?
So, one of the things that I've been working on is tourism. Because that's our number one industry is tourism. And some of the, talking about the revenue shortfalls and some of the cutbacks have been in the tourism area. And the regional tourism councils have been hit pretty hard in our area and all throughout the Commonwealth, actually. So I'm on the Joint Committee of Tourism, and we're actually going to have the committee meeting in Plymouth on June 23rd. To actually hear from the folks in the area of what's going on for tourism here, what's going on with the Plymouth 400, and hopefully get some traction to actually look at, changing the formula on how RTCs, the regional tourism councils, actually receive funding from the state. The Plymouth County area, the Cape Cod area, the South Coast area would benefit from a formula change.
Okay. I know there's a couple other things. I had one of our sponsors, Peter Brown, kind enough to ask if we can get the word out about, we've had the folks from Hydrea for Heroes in, and from what I'm understanding is that the town of Plymouth's Veterans Committee are actually going to put together an event called Vet Work. I guess this is a free job connector mixer for veterans and military spouses. What do you know about this?
Well, what it is, it's going to be held on June 1st at the Tavern on the Wharf from 5:30 to 7:30. It's sort of a networking event, but there are going to be a number of businesses from the South Shore, and the focus will be on a mix of veterans and their spouses, and trying to connect them with the jobs that are needed throughout the South Shore. So it's like a job fair, but it's not. It's more like a chamber after hours event where you're going to be coming, networking, socializing. But there'll be businesses there, and hopefully we can get more veterans and their spouses as well. Sometimes we forget about the spouses of military people, to hopefully get some jobs.
Yeah, and I know that Peter had sent me along a message saying that the idea is to try to get folks to sign up in advance. There is a way for folks to be able to. To sign up and get involved, and I guess folks have until, I would say, the 29th to register.
Yeah, it's right after Memorial Day.
Yeah, www.plymouthchamber.com. Free event, and again, as the representative said, this is on June 1st, the Tavern on the Wharf. There'll be hors d'oeuvres, and there'll be a cash bar. it's an opportunity to take a chance to maybe meet and interact with employers, and also veterans get a chance to, you know, prospective folks who are looking to hire.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to do it. It's a great idea.
Another interesting event here that I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about, Elder Life Care Network. There's a webinar coming up.
Yeah, there's a webinar this this Wednesday morning from 9 to 9:30. And I'm actually on the board of advisories for the Elder Life Care Network because I have a background in healthcare. I'm a nursing home administrator by trade. And they've asked me to speak about the, and it's timely with the new healthcare policy that just came through Washington on the House side, and to talk about some of the impact that that may have on Massachusetts. And then to talk about in Massachusetts, you know, how healthcare policies are affecting hospitals and nursing homes and assisted livings, et cetera, throughout the Commonwealth. And so we'll have some discussion about that. But the first thing I tell people when we talk about the new Affordable Care Act policy that has come out of the House is it's only come out of the House. It hasn't come from the Senate yet. Yep. It hasn't gone to conference committee. So we just need to see where it's all going to lie and what some of the changes are going to be. We know for sure, though, if it does go through the way it is, Massachusetts is going to lose $2 billion out of the MassHealth program. Because when RomneyCare was set up, it was set up with the federal waiver to get everyone in Massachusetts insured. And part of that federal waiver was getting money from the federal government. So we know about $2 billion will go away. So that's going to be a big hit in Massachusetts.
How nervous are you about that?
Pretty nervous about that. You know, we are having we're having trouble controlling our MassHealth budget as it is. As you know, it's almost $15 billion out of the $40 billion budget we have here in the state.
Big chunk.
And we do need to do things to, you know, reduce that. But we have to keep in mind the people that it's, you know, it's serving. And we have to figure out a way how to kind of keep it going and funding it.
You also have a show on PAC TV, State Matters.
Yeah, it's something I've done on PAC TV since I became a selectman back in 2010. I did a show when I was a selectman, and it's all about educating the people who watch about town government initially, and now I'm doing it for state government. And it's a show about how you connect the state and the local government and why the state matters in local government. We're running a show right now that's actually talking about the local elections that are coming up and why local elections should have 80% of the people come out to vote, you know, rather than the presidential election, because that's where it really matters on the local. But, you know, in Plymouth, we average probably 13-14% that come out to the polls when there's a local election.
And let's not forget town meetings. A lot of times you see a very small number of registered voters who turn out for town meeting and make the decisions for the majority of folks who live in said community. It's definitely interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're having I guess you're going to be having something at the Koji Bar and Grill in Plymouth. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Thursday night. Well, thank you for bringing that up. We're actually having our first get-together as a committee, running for re-election, obviously, next year. And you're always running for election as a state rep every 2 years. So we have an event at 5:30 to 7:30. We'd love folks to come down, and we're going to talk about some current events that are happening. Love to listen to what people have to say.
Anything you want to say in closing, if the folks want to reach out and get in touch with you?
If anybody wants to reach out to me, I always give out my cell phone number. It's 508-930-2979, and my office at the State House is 617-722-2014. And it's easy to remember 2014 because that was the year I was elected.
And I'm going to say, folks, he does answer the, you know, that's how I reach out to him, is just give him a call and say, Representative, you want to come on? He's like, absolutely, no problem.
Yep.
Representative, thank you for
always a pleasure, Kevin.
Coming
thank you.
In, and we're going to step aside just for a moment. And when we come back, hopefully, we're going to have Braintree Mayor Joe Sullivan on the horn. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
With your host, Kevin Tachi.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
It's been a while since we've had our next guest on. We had a couple weeks ago, we had Mayor Bill Carpenter from Brockton on. And as I promised you, try to make the rounds with some of the elected officials, whether they're selectmen or mayors. And we have a good friend, Mayor Joe Sullivan, on the line. Mayor, how are you this evening?
I'm well, Kevin. How are you?
I got to get you back in studio to co-host. We had a good time last time you sat in for an entire show. But just so folks know, you are going to be running off to school committee at the top of the hour.
Right. Yeah, we've got a lot going on here in town. But, Kevin, just in terms of your initial comment there, I thought you were going to become mayor for a day, and I was going to host your show some evening. That's the deal we had. I think there may be quite a few folks in Braintree who would be happy that you'd become mayor.
All right, so I'm holding my right hand up now. Now what do I do?
You just work your hardest every single day.
It would be an honor, but I see how much work goes into being an elected official like yourself of a community. And all that goes into it. It's by no means an easy feat to... It's almost like if there were 26 hours in a day, it wouldn't be enough time on some days for a lot of the issues and things that you have to encounter and take care of.
Yeah, well, that's true. But also the work is very meaningful. I do believe in the work that we're doing here in terms of its substance. And so we're just pushing every day. Our motto is, I think I've said to you before, and I just repeat to people all the time, is to plan the work and work the plan. Mm. And that's exactly what we're trying to do each and every day. And there are things that come at you, such as the most recent incident that we had with our police department with Motel 6 and a previous incident earlier this year back in February at the South Shore Plaza. There are things that are beyond your control that you need to respond to, but on a day-to-day basis, you know, step by step, month by month, year by year, I think under our new form of government, and it still is the new form of government, we've only been in operation for 10 years now with the mayoral form of government, we're working at it every single day. And as my mother would say, if she were here, and I thought a lot about her yesterday, she would say, Joseph, you ran for the job. So, you know, there are days where every day is a good day, but some days are more difficult than others. But I'm enjoying the challenge, and we're moving forward. We filed our budget 2 weeks ago on May the 1st, May the 2nd, actually. I filed it on the 1st as required by the charter on Monday and then spoke in front of the town council on the 2nd. It's a $140 million budget, an increase of about 3.7%, another $2.6 million in growth in terms of our schools, full funding of police and fire and DPW. And so we're putting together a blueprint as we move forward. AA+ bond rating. We've got money set aside for capital improvements to really every building in many of our neighborhood streets, as well as structuring a new program with the MSBA, the Mass School Building Authority, where we're shifting our fifth graders over the course of the next 3 to 4 years. From a middle school, we're realigning our middle schools out of elementary. So we'll have the kindergarten center that we have now. We'll have 1 to 4 in 6 grades in 6 elementary schools. And then we'll shift the fifth graders into East Middle and South Middle. And we'll do that over the course of fiscal year 20 and 21. But we have to start that now. We've got a relationship that's very strong with the Mass School Building Authority. And we're creating, actually, our own Braintree School Building Authority to respond to the financing and the underpinnings that we need to put in place to make these capital programs work. So there's a lot that we're moving forward with. I do want to note to anybody who's a golfer in the listening area, we've got a very good municipal golf course here in town, and we're adding to our clubhouse. We're doing a major expansion off of our clubhouse, and it's really coming along well. I was just over there over the weekend, so I'm not a golfer at all, but it'll add to the ambiance and just the attractiveness of our municipal golf course. And in addition, we're adding another 2,100 square feet to our Council on Urban Affairs, and that's under construction too. So we have a lot that's happening, and it keeps us very busy, and I'm proud of the work we're doing.
I'll have to digress just a little bit back to your original thought. You had talked a little bit about the Motel 6 incident.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear that that police officer is out of the hospital.
Yep.
He is okay. Can give me some thoughts on your new police chief, Paul Shastany. I know he was the former police chief in Stoughton.
Right.
How do you feel he operated under a scenario like this?
Well, I think the chief has demonstrated some great leadership. Let me just speak, first of all, to Officer Donnie Delaney.
Thank you.
And the work that he did on the work that he performs every day for us, but particularly on the night of May the 5th, where he was called into a very difficult situation. He and another five officers responded to a situation that they really didn't know, quite frankly, what was on the other side of the door. And they handled themselves not only professionally, but with a great deal of courage. And it was an incident that was extremely difficult, and all the officers responded well. Donnie, as you noted, is recovering from his injuries right now. We did have an event here Saturday here at Brinkley Town Hall, where the community came together and purchased blue light bulbs that we could display. You can see it throughout town. We have blue bulbs in our town hall windows as well. And so it's just a recognition and an embrace and an appreciation and admiration, not only for Donnie Delaney, but also for the entire Braintree PD. So it really was a nice evening for us to come together. And Donnie is on recovery. I mean, he is on his way to recovery physically, but he'll need some time. He'll need some time emotionally and otherwise. And we're here for him, and as we are for every one of our police officers. In terms of Chief Shastany, you know, we went through a difficult period, still going through it to some extent, in terms of the evidence room situation that we found ourselves in. It was a year ago that all commenced. And, you know, through a series of events, I felt that we need to make an adjustment in the leadership of the police department. And I was able to talk to quite a few folks, but the one that stood out to me was Paul Shastany, who, as you noted, was the former chief in Stoughton.
Yep.
And he's just, I think, done a very strong job. It is an important position, obviously, but his stewardship, his command of the issues in terms of how a department should operate, and he's implementing some of those changes as we speak now. And I hope to keep him for a period of time. I have a certain level of executive authority, but with the council support, we were able to file a petition to the Mass Legislature that will allow Paul Shastany to stay with us till November of 19, when he at that point would turn at the required age of retirement, age 65. And he's enjoying the challenge of being in Braintree, and I would say the community is enjoying the work that he's doing on our behalf.
How has he done? I know there were a couple of issues that led to one chief retiring, and then we had issues in regards to evidence and weapons. How is he doing as far as trying to take care of there isn't an issue like that again down the road?
Right. Upon Chief Jenkins' retirement, we were able to put together a plan where Chief Shastany, under his direction and with the support of the members of the department, a whole new physical layout of a new evidence room. That is being built out as we speak. Additionally, I think the only term I can think of is that we were able to clean up the existing issues that were that needed attention. And so through all that work, I think we're working towards what is called an accreditation, which is really a national standard in terms of police work. And Paul Shastany, our chief, is leading us in that effort. And so I think in terms of his management style, he's very solicitous. He's able to have a good presence, not only at the police department, but throughout the community. He's spoken to a lot of the local clubs, the Rotary Club, et cetera, where he's been able to get his message out about how he wants to lead the department. And again, I think we're in good hands right now, and hopefully we can continue to move forward in a real positive way. there still is some ongoing issues associated with the evidence issue that we're still dealing with in terms of the Attorney General's office still undergoing review. And those types of reviews can take a long period of time. And so we just have to work with the AG. I had brought in former Boston Superintendent Danny Linsky, who had been the superintendent of Boston Police for a number of years, to help us reshape the department operationally, and to also work with Paul Chastney to implement some recommendations and some improvements for programs and protocols. And Danny's helped us do that. His work will soon end, and Paul will carry on as he has with the day-to-day activity of the department.
Yeah, Chief. The chief did a great job in Stoughton. That if anybody recalls, there were a lot of questions and issues with the Stoughton Police Department, and he was hired, brought in, and did a lot of good work to make that a reputable department once again. So you hired a real good guy.
Yeah, and I think I think the department. I think Chief Chastney would say it as well. Mm-hmm. The department is a good department.
Absolutely,
we've got some real focused. Police officers who work hard every single day, and I don't think it was, you know, to the level that Chief Chastney had to. He came from Framingham to Stoughton, and I think in Stoughton there probably were some more pronounced issues than there were here, but there was definitely a need for, I'll say, a change agent, and that's what Paul, I think, has provided for us, but he's also nurturing members of the department in terms of adding responsibilities and encouragement to the members of the department. So I think, again, there's this leadership style that he has that I think the department is adhering to, and we're moving forward.
Again, we're speaking with Braintree Mayor Joe Sullivan, who is our guest for a couple of more moments before he runs off to school committee. Probably the last question I'll ask you is, how's the town looking for fiscal 2018?
Well, we're you know, in good shape. Our reserves are strong. We just got recertified again with a AA-plus bond rating. We had a meeting in with Standard & Poor's last week. You know, our capital projects, as I mentioned, we're able to, you know, match MSBA funding without any type of debt exclusion or override, any type of vote. We're going to be able to handle that internally in terms of our own fiscal operations. So I think that's a good sign because it sends a strong message to the MSBA that we're a good partner, but also to the community. When you have referendum questions like that, when there's a choice between, you know, increasing taxes over trying to better your schools, you know, sometimes that can become a polarizing conversation. And so to the extent that we wanted to try to manage our own affairs with our fiscal policies and our fiscal direction, we've been able to do that. So I think that's a good sign. It's a healthy sign for us. Our reserves are strong. We're one of the few communities, people don't, I guess, appreciate this fully, but back in, you know, February 15, and we don't want to go back to that, but in the snowstorms, we had $2.4 million of snow removal cost. Uh-huh. And we had budgeted that year $450,000 in our budget, which we knew was a little lower than you would have, but it was a placeholder. Right. But we were able to pay that all off. That was, I think, again, a demonstration of our fiscal management. And in paying that off, we didn't have to carry any of that debt forward in the succeeding fiscal years of 17 and 18. So we're in good shape financially. We're able to put together a very significant roads program. Really, every neighborhood in our town is seeing some attention with roads and improvements. And I think those are the tangible benefits that people see in terms of their government at work. And so we're pushing every day. I would just say to you, on July 1st, 7/1/17, in working with the July 4th committee, which is headed up by the council president, Sean Powers, the town is working in a very cooperative way, as we have in the past, with what's going to be a premier July 4th Braintree Day celebration. And so we're looking forward to that. We've already begun the planning process on that as well. So there's a lot that's happening. It's all positive. And we're going to stay focused and keep pushing ahead.
Maybe what we do is we have yourself and the town council president come in and give that a little bit of a boost sometime in June.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think we could do that. Look forward to it. Anytime I can get on your show, Kevin, I always look forward to having that conversation. The other thing I just want to add quickly.
Please do.
Is, as you know, I sit on the MassDOT board, and we've got a lot of attention, particularly here on the South Shore, with our parking garages with the MBTA. We're going to do a $31 million rehab of our Braintree T parking garage.
Right.
There's a lot of work planned in demolishing the Quincy station finally, also taking making improvements, I should say, to Quincy Avenue and to Wallace. And so the focus for us is important in terms of our regional attention that we can receive from MassDOT to be able to provide a sustainable and a public transportation network that people can have faith in and confidence in. So we're pushing on those fronts as well.
Anything you want to say in closing that we haven't touched upon, but you want to take an opportunity? Because I know you're also somebody who is who's been big on talking about the opioid crisis and what's going on with that.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. I was going to mention that we had the Attorney General Mara Healey in with us a week ago talking about the office of grant funding. I believe it was $20,000 that will help us with some curriculum and some instruction through our schools at the middle school level. We've got this community partnership that we've had in place now for a number of years, which is parents, police, fire, educators, parents who've lost children to this disease. And we're working hard to make sure that our community, number one, is promoting awareness, providing prevention, but also making sure that every citizen in our community understands that we're not going to bury our head in the sand on an issue like this. We're going to be on the forefront, and I dare say being aggressive in helping those who need our assistance. Everybody needs a helping hand at some point in life, and I think the partnership is a community program that we established that is working well. We've got a director in place now. She's doing a very nice job for us, and so we're moving forward in a way that I think is going to be comprehensive in terms of some of the solutions we'll come up with over the course of the next couple of years. This is not a situation that is going to be cured overnight, but we have seen some decline in terms of the number of overdoses that we've had here in the town of Braintree. So I do believe it's making a positive difference.
Well, Mayor, we want to thank you for the time that you allotted us. We'll definitely see if we can get you back on in the next 4 to 5 weeks so we can promote that big event.
That'd be great. Thank you, Kevin. It's great to be with you and your listeners, always.
You got it. And we'll talk about me being mayor for a day.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We're going to make this happen.
I'd love to get you in here. You know? You can do some good things for us.
Make some changes. Thanks, Mayor.
Kevin. Good to be with you.
There he is, Braintree Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. We're going to step aside. And when we come back, we're going to talk parades. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
This is your operator speaking.
Oh, good. Yeah, can I have 1-888-64-TINIES?
Sir, you want the operator to connect you to 1-888-64-TINIES?
Oh, yeah. I got a broken windshield.
Sir, the phone company cannot be concerned with your broken windshield. Our concern is how did you access my number? When you press the operator button, you should hear an annoying dial tone.
Well, yeah, I got a rotary dial phone here from 1970 or so. Are you going to connect me to Tiny?
I guess not.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right. We are back here in studio on Monday Night Talk. We're like chatting. Take those off. You don't need those. Take those off. We have joining us two good friends from the Huntington Elementary School, the City of Champions, Brockton. We have the principal, Mary Beth O'Brien, and we have June Saba.
Do you want me to help you with the title?
Yeah, you got like a long title now.
Long title.
You used to be what she was.
I used to be the principal of the Huntington, but
that's
now
correct.
I'm the executive director of learning and teaching.
Yes, it's good thing you said it.
It's difficult for me, but Yes. I've handed over the reins of the school to Miss O'Brien, who's doing an amazing job.
She's doing a great job. She's getting stuff out on social media. And
oh, that's been a little weak lately. I have to get my social media presence back up and on the air, if you will.
You're the head of the Huntington Elementary School. But we're here to talk about a big event, and this is back in back at another station where June basically reached out. And the staff, I don't know if you may have been one of the people, but you guys always sending letters. Hey, we got the big event coming up, the elementary school's Memorial Day Parade. And so I thought this year I got the letter. I go, you know, I haven't had a chance to promote their big event, which is coming up on Friday, May 26th.
Yes.
Down in the Campello section of Brockton. That is on Warren Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Is it
1200? 1121 Warren Avenue.
Yeah, it's gonna,
yeah, it's the Huntington School.
This is a big event.
It is. It's been 120 years. This is our 120th, actually.
Can you believe
it?
We are
a celebration. No.
And they kept it going.
And we haven't been there all 120 years, but we
some
have
days it feels like that. We've been there for a long time, and we've evolved as a school. However, each year, whenever it's talked about, no matter where you are, you can often find someone who can say, I went to that school. This was my classroom, and this was how long I attended. And I think that...
And you usually hear somebody add in that they played the Tonette when they were in third grade during the Huntington School Parade.
Yeah.
And what is this?
The Tonette.
This isn't like the recorder, is it?
Yes,
that's
it's
exactly
the recorder.
What it is.
Right?
So you renamed it?
Yes.
Oh, I rename everything. Yes.
Oh, okay. Right,
I don't think he renamed it. I think that's the name. They learned it as, but we now call it the recorder.
Is that what it says on the box?
That's the official name.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Tonette. I'll have to keep that in mind. Because I played the recorder, the Tonette, back in the day.
At the Huntington?
No, actually the Keith.
Oh.
The original Keith.
Okay.
Which I want to say was a sister school to the Huntington,
yes,
I believe.
I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes sense, but this 120th parade is a pretty exciting one. Every year as the parade comes around, you realize how many people are just have such an attachment to the parade. Mm. It has a lot of nostalgia. We have people who work in the school department who every year turn out because they were former Huntington students. Aldo Petronio, our chief financial officer, every year talks about the Huntington parade.
So
and
it's
the
like alumni.
It's
Huntington
alumni.
School alumni.
So when you talk about elementary school alumni, I don't think you have a stronger base of people who are alumni from the elementary schools than the Huntington.
See, so you were searching for somebody to come with you.
Yes.
And you brought, dynamic duo.
There's a lot of history there. And the longer you stick around, the more people you meet that have some sort of connection to the Huntington School. And I think when you're talking about it being in the Campello neighborhood, there's such rich history there.
Yep.
And we have fostered a strong partnership with the Campello Business Association and a lot of the organizations like the Keith Park Neighborhood Association, Cape Cod Cafe, the Italian Kitchen. And when you talk about what keeps the community vibrant and continues the traditions of its past, but helps you to remember, and you can begin to foster new traditions and strengthen your community. That's been a real significant part of the Huntington School and the neighborhood. We've done a lot of work with the Campello Business Association to help.
Ron, is that Ron Bethany still chair?
No, actually, John Jamoulis from the Italian Kitchen is the chair.
John Jamoulis with the Cape Cod Cafe?
Yes.
He is, but he is the chair now of the Campello Business Association.
There we go, okay.
But not
Ron
Italian
Bethany,
Kitchen.
I'm sorry, yes. Oh, don't tell him I said that.
He might have heard it. Sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry. It's tough when you're on the radio. I've never done this before.
But it's good food, though. So
it is excellent food.
You didn't really go wrong.
But the Italian Kitchen is also part of the Campello Business Association. But John Jamoulis is the chair. Ron Bethany still sits on it. A couple of the neighborhood churches, the First Lutheran Church is on that. And the more that we connect together, more things happen that helps to bring the vibrancy and the old tradition back to that neighborhood. And one of the things we've really tried to do at the Huntington School is to help our students participate in community events in order for them to feel established and part of the Brockton community, which therefore has a long-lasting success with giving back to your community, making sure you care for your neighborhood, walking up and down Main Street to do things like decorate the flower baskets that are there, and they just have a connection, and they look back and say, I appreciate my neighborhood. And that's been really important. So when getting back to the Huntington School Parade, we don't just keep it exclusively to the Huntington. This year, you'll see it's more of a unity of a community as well as the unity of the Brockton Public Schools. We have representation from almost every single school, most of the bands that represent all of the
bands?
Bands from the elementary level, the middle school level, and of course, it's not a parade without Mr. Macrina and the band.
Throw a fire truck in there somewhere?
There actually, this year we have a fire truck. We also have the bagpipe band.
Okay, the Brockton Fire Department pipes and drums?
Yeah, pipes and drums are coming.
Tell Peter Reardon that you mentioned them.
Yes. Thank you. We also have a couple of other organizations with model classic cars. One of our really consistent partners, the Bridgewater State University Professional Development Schools, will be there. All of the principals from the elementary group will be joining us, and some of them have denied willing to march, but they will. But one of our greatest components of the parade at the end of this year is to celebrate the Huntington School Parade and its new beginning for next year, which is to have Principal John Lander of the Goddard and Melanie Dobson, the assistant principal, where we'll be passing the torch so that they can continue the tradition as they'll be moving into the Huntington building next year.
What do you guys know about the history of this? I mean, how did it all start? Who just one day said this elementary school needs to have a parade?
That's a really good question.
Well, a little bit we do know.
I didn't know if that paperwork got passed down from principal to principal.
We do have a little book. It almost goes all the way back to, it was a Principal Radcliffe, first Huntington, then it becomes Radcliffe. So it changed, evolved over time. But I don't think, I think we've kind of made up our own history over the years. And we still do honor the men and women. We always have a section that's honoring our veterans. We always have that section. We have a banner for them, and we always seek out a group that we'd like to focus on or have the community really appreciate for any particular year. But beyond that, we've always, we had the year you had actually shared with me earlier, we dedicated the parade to former Principal Ed Kelly. Yep. The parade was absolutely a big deal to him. One of the things that we do when we turn over the torch, and Mary Beth will have to do that with Jay Lander soon, is we hand them the torch and we say, the most important job you have as principal of the Huntington School is to make sure that the parade is successful. And if you do that well, then you are a successful principal. So there's a little bit of pressure there.
So is
there.
This torch like the spirit stick and bring it on or something? Hey, don't drop that torch.
Don't drop the torch. Okay. So, the history of it goes so far back that...
What's it like to get these kids ready? I can swear one year I saw you out back trying to get all the kids ready, and you were also out there, June.
So first, we can't forget, although he wouldn't come and be on the radio, but he is the radio personality of the Huntington School, but the assistant principal, Nick Molinari. He loves to get over the microphone, so we leave that up to him.
Why isn't Nick here?
Oh, he had other commitments tonight. But
Nick.
I know.
Next year.
Yeah, next year.
You always see Nick at the beginning of the parade with the tall hat on, and he's the one who is the official sort of, he begins the praise, the MC.
Yeah. And he organizes all the groups. I mean, we have a list, but he makes sure everybody is in their rows and in their sections. And so he gets that started and up and running. But we do have a couple of times where we practice. But again, a parade is not a parade without the bands. So I always say, make sure there are plenty of bands. And I get on the phone with Mr. Macrina back in September to book this date before proms and all of the other competing events that occur throughout the city. But
you solidify your spot in line.
Oh, absolutely. But 120 years helps us along a little bit. But actually, I just spoke with Mr. Macrina last week, and I said, a parade is not a parade without strong bands.
And
you can't march to note without a drum.
You need the award-winning notes from Brockton High School.
Amazing. And I have to say, the Italian Kitchen, one of our best, I would say, supporters of the parade. Every year as we come around that corner, the Italian Kitchen, everybody who works there, all of their patrons are standing outside watching us come around the corner and visit. Mr. Macrina's band always makes a special effort to sort of perform a solo for them right there in front of the Italian Kitchen. Yeah. So that's a really good spot.
And what is the parade route? Folks who are tuned in right now, what is the parade route?
So it starts at the Huntington School. We walk down Market Street. We take a left onto Warren Ave, a right onto West Chestnut, and that's where we pass the Italian Kitchen. We walk down Main Street, past the South Side Post Office, and then we take a right next to one of our promising partners, Walgreens. Then we walk down the old historic South
Street. Name dropping all over the place.
Absolutely. We walk all the way down the historic South Street, which again is a critical piece of the parade because you're celebrating that history. And then we end facing the Huntington School, where that's usually where we take our corner and we all start to trickle on back, but that's where we honor our Grand Marshal, or we celebrate the successes of the Brockton Public Schools, which is really what that parade has become. You have South Middle School right next door.
Sure.
When we transfer over to the Gilmore School, we'll continue to be part of the Huntington School Parade as we go on. And the parade will always remain its historic Huntington Elementary School parade, but we'll begin to celebrate more of the schools in the Campello side to really show the unity within our city, because together we can do so much more than simply just be one parade, but rather a parade that honors the history of the Brockton Public Schools and the Campello community.
You've both had a chance to witness students over the years get ready for this. What is it like for them, knowing that they're going to be pretty much the center of the focus of an event like this?
So this sounds ridiculous, but if you go back and you talk to some kids, they'll remember that they were either the flag holder or a banner holder, and they'll go back and Google themselves, and they'll see after all of these years their photos in the Enterprise and things like that, and they always remember it. We actually had a phone call today, and somebody had called and said, do you have the old yearbooks? Because I held the flag and I want to see, I can't remember if it was this year or that year, but I want to see myself in that yearbook. And it's so funny, but it is, by being such a, you know, public event, it also helps to capture the history and the way that as a school we've evolved. Many years ago, it would be tagged as students wear their Sunday best in their red, white, and blue. And now as we evolve as a school, we can go back and watch our students proudly march now as Huntington School with their navy blue shirts and their khaki trousers as the Huntington School community.
And it's learners. Also just a lot of fun.
Well, you know, you've walked. You've it's been a lot. Part of it.
I think the adults that are part of it are always, especially people who are new to the parade, after they walk the route, they say, oh my goodness, that was so much fun. I didn't expect it to be that really well attended, that much fun. And that really gives even the adults.
Is that how you felt as an administrator there?
Oh, I always laugh at the end of it. I think it's just so much fun. Yeah. And I actually still get invited to walk in the parade. So I'm happy to be part of it this year.
I did call my mother this year and I said, do you have May 26th on your calendar? She's like, I don't know. And I'm like, Mom, it's the Huntington School Parade. You can't miss it. She goes, really? You're an adult now. I said, you watched me march in elementary school when I played the clarinet from the Franklin School, then in middle school, and then when I was a majorette, which, by the way, you ask how we prepare, and I always tell the students that I was a Brockton High School majorette, and we had to practice for all of our parades, and we had to make sure our feet were at 90 degrees with pointed toes and upright knees and to stand proudly. So we make sure that we practice
that. That's excellent.
That.
Nothing wrong with posture.
It's very important.
No. Any other special guests that we can expect this year?
I'm thinking that there will be quite a few. Unfortunately, we have had a couple of declines recently for usually people that can make it. Okay. Just it being so close to Memorial Day, which I think is significant. We've worked really hard to make sure that it's close to the Memorial Day weekend, but where it is the Friday before, I think some, you know, it's a very popular time. So we hope we have a lot of spectators.
So that's it. That's what we hope. Lots of people turn out. It means so much to the kids and to the community.
How big is the school? How many teachers and administrators and students as a whole that we'll see being a part of, you know, mixed in with the bands and the fire truck.
So you'll see 575 students that are just Huntington exclusive, but then between the seven different bands and then different community groups that are coming to march, you should see over 750 people within the parade march alone, if not more than that.
So we have representation from basically every school in the district. So that's why we really do encourage the community to come out.
Mm-hmm. How has this been? I mean, again, you're going to walk this year.
Right? I am going to walk. You're going to walk.
And as Mary Beth was describing, that this is going to be kind of like a new chapter. After this year, it'll be a new chapter. How does it make you feel as somebody who was once the principal handed off the baton to Mary Beth?
Well, I look forward to seeing what the people that are moving over from the Garter do to help to support the parade moving forward. It's just it's kind of a melancholy feeling, but it's a good feeling, and you know that the people that are moving into the school, the group, they're very committed, and we know that they're going to carry on our traditions.
Definitely very interesting. And again, we're speaking with June Saba, who has a very long title and is instrumental in the Brockton Public School system, and we have the principal of the Huntington Elementary School at least for one more year before she moves over to the Gilmore. Mm-hmm. Is it still going to be called the Gilmore, or are they going to change the name of it?
You can't change 120 years of history.
No. I'm talking about the school. Okay, yeah, okay.
So it will be the Gilmore, yes.
Yeah, the Huntington has to stay the Huntington, but we'll move and change the name to the Gilmore. But the tradition and the honor and everything we stand for will still remain the same.
Anything that we haven't touched upon, but you want to make sure you tell folks who are listening right now, about the special event that's coming up on May 26th. Maybe give them the time and once again give them the route.
Sure. So Huntington School Parade, May 26th. We kick off at approximately 12:30 p.m. It's about a quarter mile for the route. So it does, being such a long parade march of people, you know, you'll definitely catch it if you stop by any time between 12:30 and 1, but it is a really great event. The kids march proudly, and they're really fun to watch. So we hope to see a lot of people there. Come and celebrate our community of learners.
Now, have you been praying to the gods above in regards to...
Oh, we're not even going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about that, but if we did happen...
Maybe new stakes, I have to ask.
But yes.
If we have... to reschedule due to things that we cannot change, it will be the Tuesday following the Monday holiday so that we can still honor Memorial Day.
See, that's very important. Mm-hmm. Although, again, we don't predict it. I'm hoping that it's going to be bright and sunny and you can get it over and done with before the long weekend instead of going, you being at home going, oh, we're going to have to do this Tuesday.
That is the worst.
Yeah.
The morning of.
Ladies, I want to thank you so much. Now, before you walk out of here, we were trying to do this before. As folks who tune into Monday Night Talk, whenever they check out the podcast, we'll have you two ladies kind of together. It's a bad radio thing, but we'll take the picture so folks will be able to see you on the podcast and go, oh, there's Mary Beth or there's June. I want to thank you both for coming in. And we'll try to make this an annual thing. Now,
absolutely.
Will it be you that I speak to next year, Mary Beth, or am I going to have to speak to somebody else?
I have already promised Principal John Landers that he won't have to do this alone moving forward. And
but
Melanie,
I thought you did a fantastic.
Well.
You did a fantastic job.
We'll plan the parade together in the years to come.
Excellent.
So,
well, we wish you the very best, and tell the students that I was asking for them, and I hope that it's a great parade. Now, I will try to stop by.
You used
see you
to
there.
Stand there with your microphone. I don't know. You have to be there.
Let's see what happens, because usually I actually work for a local cable company, and so when I'm not here, I'm there. But let's see what I can do.
Maybe that local cable company can bring their video camera.
Well, Proctor Community Access might not like that.
Oh, all right.
Don't start any wars over here.
But
thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, ladies, so much for joining
thank
us.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So now what we're going to do is we are going to transition from talking about the Huntington Elementary School Parade, the Memorial Day Parade, to actually we're going to talk a little bit about... I think Norm Kelly. Norm, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
How are you doing today, Norm?
I'm doing very good. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your company. You are the founder of Software Quality Associates. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, we're waiting. I haven't seen Miranda. We are going to talk a little bit about Miranda Harbinson. She's a Pembroke High School student, and we're waiting her and her mom to come by so we can talk a little bit about this money that you guys have been granted, that you're granting her. There's going to be a special ceremony that's going to be taking place Thursday.
Yes, at Pembroke High School. Looking forward to it.
Now, tell me, if you could, while we wait for Miranda to show up here. Oh, wait. Here's Miranda now. I think Mom's with her.
I've been in the kitchen waiting.
You have?
Yes, sorry.
Have a seat. Mom, you going to talk or no?
No.
Okay. So why don't we have you sit over here, Miranda? And so just to set things up here, tell us, if you will, Norm, again, you were actually starting to tell us a little bit about your organization and how you guys created the Meta Students Foundation back in 2012.
Right. Back in October of 2012, I came across a story of another high school senior young woman who was taking a young gentleman, a senior who was confined to a wheelchair with a crippling disease to his senior prom. And he had wanted to go to the prom and he couldn't find someone to bring him. And then this young lady whose mom worked at the high school volunteered to bring him. She was a senior at a different high school in Rhode Island. And she brought him to the prom, and the kids at Johnston High School in Rhode Island had heard that Stephen was going to be going, so they were really psyched. So what they did was they created a Twitter account within the senior class, and they nominated him to be king of the court. And subsequently, he was given the honor of being the king of the court. So they had a crown on him, and they were dancing around him, and I'll never forget when the reason for our first story. So we made a video out of it.
Okay.
And I'll never forget being in the kitchen doing the video and Stephen saying to the camera, "Thank you for making the best day of my life."
Oh.
And it just kind of crushed me in that, here's a kid that is, from the moment he wakes up in the morning, he needs help throughout the day. Never missed a day of school, and and this young lady out of the blue volunteers to take him to his senior prom, makes the best day of his life. And it was that loving kindness, that generosity, that just wanted to help another person out, that was the impetus for Meta Students. And we basically give $1,000 grants to high school kids that perform random acts of love and kindness. And that's how we were introduced to Miranda, whose story reminds me of that first story of Meta Students, in that she is taking a young person under her, just being like a best friend to her, making her feel part of, spending time with her, and making her feel comfortable, taking her to the junior prom and the senior prom. And I can just imagine how that young woman feels. I bet you it's very similar to how Stephen felt. And it's that kind of loving kindness that we look for. And we're just thrilled that Gwen nominated Miranda, and we had the opportunity to sit down and meet with her. And she's just a great young woman on a special path. And what blows my mind with most of these kids is they don't do it for recognition. They do it just because they want to help someone out. And it's very random, and they're very humble about it. So,
well, now let me ask Miranda about that, because let's see if her theory works, if she agrees with your theory.
Sure.
We have Miranda is here in studio. Miranda, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you.
Now, as Norm was kind of explaining, that you were somebody that was nominated by your choir teacher, Gwen Chapman, And tell us a little bit about, now you were nominated because of the kindness that you had shown towards.
Yeah, I had no idea that she even like nominated me until she emailed me, because I'm not in school anymore.
Okay.
I've been doing senior project, which means I'm in a preschool because I'm going to go to college for early childhood. And then eventually I want to do something like with special needs, like in the early development stages and everything. But she emailed me and told me that she nominated me for it, and then I was a final contestant. And like, just for her to go out of her way and do that for me, like, that was like a big thing for me.
Explain your relationship with this other choir member.
I met her 4 years ago, my freshman year, and she was in choir.
What was her name?
Mia.
Okay.
And I noticed that she was kind of just like in her own little zone, and she was just doing her thing. And I myself, Miss Chapman, like, never asked me to go over there for her, like, never asked me to do anything. I like just involved myself with her, and then like, I don't know, something about her, like, I couldn't just like not the next year like not be there for her and not like help her out and everything like that. So it was just a continuous thing. Like, I feel like we have a friendship now, even though she doesn't really like talk to me. Like, I know, like, she'll give me hugs and everything like that. So like, it's a good feeling to know that like I can like help somebody in some way, but even if it's just in the choir room, following along and like knowing what to do on the stage and everything.
Okay, so there's going to be an event that's coming up, a ceremony at Pembroke High School.
Yep.
This will be taking place this Thursday at 1 p.m. And I got to ask you, Norm, now the money that's being awarded to Miranda, is this given on any particular premise? Like, it has to be used for college, or is it just she's being awarded the money?
Miranda can do what she wants with the money. Lots of times they may use it for college tuition, or they may use it for a laptop, or they might donate it. It's really up to her. We just give her the freedom to do with it as she wishes.
So what is your plan? Is the plan to go to school? You're talking about wanting to get an education.
I'm going to use it for books and whatever money else. I'll put that towards tuition.
Now, from what I understand, the information that Norm had forwarded to me, along with a good friend, Laura, who helps with the public relations for the Meta students, your act of kindness didn't end there. That's not the only thing that you've done as well.
Last year.
Yeah, tell me, what is a promposal? What is that?
So a promposal is like something when you're going to ask somebody to prom, and like some people do it like very big, or some people just be like, hey, will you go to prom for me? So like last year, I got a poster board, wrote, Mia, will you go to prom with me? And then I got a little bouquet of flowers, and I stood in front of my choir class and presented it to her, and she said yes, and we went to prom last year. And I wouldn't have gone to my prom if I didn't bring her. And this year, it just felt like what I wanted to do. Like, this is totally what I want to do. I did another promposal, and I used sweet and sour, like Sour Patch Kids. And because, like, her mom said that she likes us, so I, like, did another promposal in the coffee bean. And the coffee bean is something at my school that helps with the PACE students and, like, getting them involved. The students and the faculty all go down. It's, like, they have bagels, pretzels, nachos, and coffee. And, just, like, the whole school goes down. And it gives them involvement into the community. And so they're not just, like, thrown into the world and don't know what to do, like, job-wise.
That's very commendable that you would do something like that. And there aren't enough acts of kindness these days. When you look in the news or you see anything on social media, it's a lot of negativity. So this is, when I saw this, Norm, I'll tell you, when I saw this, Laura sent me this information, I thought it was a great story. And it also was following on the heels where, you know, promoting the Huntington Elementary School's 120th anniversary Memorial Day event. So I thought it was perfect, like a nice 1-2 punch. This isn't for being around for 3 years, or the organization being together for 3 years. You guys have given out a lot of money, Norm.
Yeah, I think we're in the neighborhood. I think this is our 42nd or 43rd grant. So, you know, we're in the neighborhood of, I don't know, $42,000 to $43,000, I believe. My company, SQA, donates quite a bit of money. We've also had some fundraisers, and we have a couple key donors, if you will, that have been great help for us as well.
What's the process that you go through? I mean, again, you've given away, you know, up to $43,000 And I would believe that it's in $1,000 increments. What's the process that you go through in order to pick out the right candidate who shows acts of kindness?
Well, we get most of our nominations, actually all of our nominations, come through the website. So at the beginning of the year, we send out like an email blast to a database of teachers and administrators in Rhode Island and Massachusetts, asking them to nominate students if they know of someone. And that usually puts together like a little pipeline for us. So this year, I think we had 50 to 60 stories to look at.
Wow.
And, you know, I kind of try to qualify them on the phone, try to get a better idea of what the stories were all about. And some of them have a little more, you know, a little better fit than others. They're all great. Don't get me wrong, but some of them just a little more powerful than others. Sure. So we try to go out and then meet the student. And, you know, that's kind of how the process has worked.
And you chose the word Meta because why?
Well, that was, I have to say, there's a company in Massachusetts that did a lot of our internet work. And the word Meta means loving kindness. And it was just a perfect name for the organization, and that epitomizes what we're all about.
And if folks want to see any of the students who have been recipients of the kindness from the Meta Student Foundation, they can actually go on to their website, www.metastudents.org, to find out more. Probably my final question to you, Miranda, are you looking forward to the ceremony?
Yeah, I can't wait. It's just like I can't like put into words like how grateful I am to like have been given the honor to receive this scholarship. Like, I'm so appreciative for it.
Now, Mom has been a silent partner throughout this. Mom, you get to be the punctuation at the end of the sentence. Give me your thoughts, if you will. How do you feel about this, that your daughter is being rewarded for her kindness towards others?
I am so beyond words, and I couldn't be more proud of her, and it makes me cry happiness tears on such a wonderful person that she's become, and what she has done, and what she's still going to become, and I'm going to cry. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Mom, for bringing Miranda here. Norm, I want to thank you and your organization for at least sharing this information so we could share it with our audience that, you know what, there are people out there doing good, and you know what, you don't always get rewarded for the good things that you do, but in this particular case, somebody is being rewarded and they're going to put it to good use.
Well, thanks for having me.
You got it. Well, we've been speaking with Norm Kelly. He is the founder of this organization, and we want to thank Miranda for being here.
Thank you.
The organization is Meta Students Foundation. Again, there's going to be an event at the Pembroke High School this Thursday at 1 p.m. as they honor Miranda for her great work. Miranda Harbington, who is a former Pembroke High School student and hopefully soon to be a college student. So wish you the best of luck.
Thank you for having me.
We are going to step aside for a few moments, and we're going to switch gears and talk a little hockey with Dave Gosha, voice of the Boston Bruins. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Joining us, it's usually kind of an annual treat that we get a chance to speak with the radio play-by-play guy for the Boston Bruins, CBS Radio, none other than Dave Gosha. Welcome back to the program, Dave.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
I got to say, I'm kind of happy that the Bruins made it into the playoffs, but it was a lot that happened during the 2016-2017 season that I thought that we could take a few minutes to talk about today.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, them getting back in there was great. I mean, it's especially the way they missed it the previous 2 years. The last day of the season was really a heartbreaking way to see them bow out. So, yeah, I think first and foremost, to get playoff hockey back in Boston was great. Great to be able to call the six playoff games in that series, and you hope it's a much longer stay as they move forward now.
Now, as somebody who, you do this for a living, when you make it into the playoffs, I'm sure that you're saying to yourself, I don't want to have to pull out my golf clubs too soon. Was it too soon this year?
Yeah, well, it always is, right? I think that you hope that, when you looked at that series with Ottawa, that I think the Bruins felt, and I did too, it was a winnable series for them if you look at it. You know, the three of the four games they lost were in overtime. I would love to have seen the Bruins play Ottawa with a healthy lineup. I mean, it's not an excuse, but the fact of the matter is they were into their 10th different defenseman on their depth chart as that series went on. And, no Torrey Krug and no Brandon Carlo, and Adam McQuaid got dinged up as the series went on too, and David Krejci wasn't much of a factor. So, yeah, I think it was too early for them, but, the lack of good health for them down the stretch really, I think, caught up to them as that series went on.
Well, I would think that there was a little bit of a proud moment being a Boston University alum, seeing a guy like Charlie McAvoy come in and play some big minutes for being a rookie. Who just, that's how he got his start in the NHL, is helping the Boston Bruins in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's funny too, Kevin. I don't think that was the plan. I mean, I think they were hoping he was going to go play in Providence after they signed him, the Providence Bruins. But the injuries really forced their hand. And he had to, he came in and played well, and it was really out of necessity. It didn't take long for him to be paired with Zdeno Chara and that top defense pair for the Bruins, and to literally be thrown into the fire, I thought was he handled himself about as well as you could. I thought he was excellent. And, as they move forward now, I know he's playing over the World Championships with Team USA, and, another good step for him. It's a busy year for him, right, between BU in the World Junior Tournament, two games in Providence, played with the Bruins in the playoffs, and now playing overseas for the World Championships. But for Bruins fans, I mean, it's what a sight he was to be able to come out and play as well as he did as a 19-year-old, and just a sign of good things to come.
Looking back at the 2016-2017 season, I know there is so many, and you're up there, and it's a couple of things on the top of your head that you felt that were the highs and maybe even the low points of the season as you watched every game.
Well, I think, maybe we start just, for sake of argument on the low side of things. I mean, it's never easy to see anybody lose their job. And, you see Claude Julien get fired in early February. And I think there were times, Kevin, earlier in the season or maybe even a couple of weeks before that I thought, they may make a change. The Bruins lost a real tough game in Detroit. They lost in a shootout 6-5, and I think that game they had 2-3-goal leads and just could not hang on to it. And you had a feeling that, this something might change here. And I will tell you, after all the rumors, it seems like it's been for years, of them moving on from Claude, when it did happen, it did kind of take me aback a little bit that they actually did make the change. So, he was a real good guy to work with for a decade here, and you never like to see that. I do think as time went on, it appeared that a change was needed. And I think on the positive side of it, Bruce Cassidy did a terrific job. 18-8-1 in the regular season, and then getting them to game six in the first round. And I would have been shocked if they went into another direction after the season ended. So it did take them, a couple of days before they removed that interim tag. So, yeah, I think that, the way some of these young kids contributed, McAvoy down the stretch, Brandon Carlo, by and large, had a real good rookie season. David Pastrnak, over 30 goals.
Yep.
I think there's a lot of positives for them to build on as they move forward.
And it's even funnier to see that Claude crossing the border and adding to a rivalry between the Canadiens and the Bruins. Were you surprised by that move?
A little bit initially, Kevin, but then the more I thought about it, it's funny, the last team that Montreal played against the Bruins with Michel Therrien as their coach was on a Sunday night, and the Bruins beat them 4-0 in the Garden.
Canadians just—they looked completely out of it. You know, they looked almost indifferent to a certain extent, and you know, it was—you had a feeling they might make a change there. Now, whether it was going to be quote or not was a whole different story, but I think it was going to take the right situation for him to jump right back in. I don't think he was that eager to do it, kind of out of the fly in mid-season. But you know, look, 5 years and $25 million—that can change a lot of people's minds. So. You know, he got a great offer from the Canadians. I think, in a way, if you look at it, both teams got what they needed. The Canadians really needed a coach to get them back on the rails defensively, which you know, Claude certainly was able to do. You know, they lost their first round series to the Rangers, I think, because they, you know, just lack of goal scoring, which is something that has kind of plagued them the last few years. And the Bruins needed a coach in Bruce Cassidy that gave them a little bit more free rein to push it offensively and a little more freedom in general. So. I think both teams really, bigger picture, probably got what they wanted. I think the only way it could have ended better is if they managed to both meet in the playoffs, but that didn't happen, so we'll have to wait to next year for that.
And interesting enough that the Bruins, they didn't wait. They removed the interim tag from Bruce Cassidy's title, so he is now the head coach. What does he bring to this Bruins team that maybe it's been lacking the past couple of years?
Well, I think, you know, more than anything, it was a freshness. If that's a good way to put it, a different set of eyes, a different voice, and certainly nothing against Claude Julien, but 10 years is an eternity to coach in the NHL, in any sport, but I think especially in the NHL. And, you know, I think Bruce brought just a little different approach. I think X's and O's wise, they would tell you they didn't make a ton of changes, but they did have a little bit more freedom to go offensively, to try to create offensively, and if there were mistakes made along that process, you know, they were corrected quickly and they moved on. I don't think they dwelt on it much. So, you know, I think they needed just a different, you know, a different approach or a different mindset to a certain extent. And, you know, if you look at it, Kevin, there's guys in that locker room that have never played for another coach in the NHL besides Claude Julien before the coaching change.
Right.
And I think that, you know, the Bruins they're eager to see what the future holds now because, as we mentioned, you get Charlie McAvoy that I certainly think they expect to be there next year. Somebody like Jake DeBrusque has had a terrific playoff now with the Providence Bruins. Not sure if they can sign Anders Bjork out of Notre Dame, who's also over the World Championships right now. But, you know, especially as they, you know, Sean Corrali came up late and
right.
Obviously had a huge goal in Game 5 of the playoffs. So they're looking more and more to, you know, implement some younger players into this lineup. And I think they feel that, you know, Bruce Cassidy is the best man to lead them down that road.
And if you would remind listeners, Sean Corrali, if I'm correct, didn't he come out of that trade of Milan Lucic?
He did. You know, it's kind of a two-way connection. Yeah, so the Bruins traded Lucic a couple of years ago out to the L.A. Kings, and they got back in return Martin Jones, Colin Miller in a first-round pick.
Right.
They then flipped Jones to San Jose, and they got Sean Corrali and San Jose's first-round pick. So, yeah, they used the San Jose pick to take Trent Frederick, who's had a real good rookie year out of Wisconsin this past year. But, yeah, Corrali's a guy that, you know, as you look forward, I think the other guy I'd be remiss in not mentioning, Kevin, is Jacob Forsbacka-Carlson out of BU. I think they feel he could be their third-line center next year, and maybe Sean Corrali fits in somewhere on that fourth line. Certainly brings a lot of energy. The last two games he played in that series, he was very good against Ottawa. You know, in addition to the goal in double overtime, he was a force in those games. So, yeah, I think he's another guy they look to in a little different role, I think in a third or a fourth line role, but, you know, has a role hopefully going forward nonetheless.
Again, we're speaking with Dave Gosher, the radio guy for the Boston Bruins, and talking a little post 2016-2017 season with Dave. Dave, now, so here we are. We're sitting in the off season. A lot of things are going to be happening. Probably one thing that fans aren't aware of is we're going to have a little bit of an expansion draft. Those who've never experienced it or who don't recall when we've had past expansion drafts, what's your understanding of what could happen?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the question for every team now going forward is, you know, each team is going to lose one player. So Vegas comes in as the 31st team in the NHL, so each team is going to lose one player. So you're going to have 30 players that are going to be taken by Vegas. A couple of different models that you can use to protect your players.
You know, we should say players that have that are on their entry-level contracts don't need protection. Players that have no movement clauses have to be protected. So, you know, the Bruins will probably go, I think, with a model, Kevin, of 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goaltender. And, you know, there's a chance they could lose somebody potentially like an Adam McQuaid, maybe a Colin Miller on the back end. They could maybe lose a Ryan Spooner if he's not protected. You know, Spooner had a tough time getting in the playoffs and on the roster late in that series against Ottawa. So they will lose somebody, and more than likely it's going to be somebody that somebody they like. You know, I think on the back end, it's more than likely they protect, you know, Chara, Krug, and Kevin Miller, I would guess. And, you know, if they expose somebody like an Adam McQuaid, he is someone that more than likely, you know, potentially the Vegas could take. So, yeah, that's kind of how they approach it moving forward. And, you know, it's kind of the nature of the piece right now. Or maybe they, you know, they talk about a potential trade with Vegas. That's always an option, too. But, you know, they're going to lose a player off that roster more than likely. They'd rather not lose, for sure.
Would you want to sacrifice a Zdeno Chara, or would you want? I think I've read something that he would like to stay in Boston and maybe extend his contract in some way or manner. Is that plausible?
Well, I think it is plausible. I don't think they would extend him in terms of making him available in the draft. I just don't see that happening. He's got a no movement clause, and you know, I think he's going into the final year of his deal. Keeps himself in great shape. I thought he had a good year this year. I really did. I mean, they limited his role a lot, Kevin, just to, you know, being the first shutdown pair, mainly paired with Brandon Carlo.
Right.
Kill penalties, played very little power play. And I think they felt with him less is more, you know, especially as he gets up there and, you know, he turned 40 years old here a couple of months ago. So, yeah, I think they welcomed him back for another year. Where it goes beyond that, who knows? I think he'd like to play as long as possible, keep himself in terrific shape. But, yeah, I think he's part of it moving forward next year and then kind of see where the chips fall after that.
How about as far as free agents? Is that something that the Bruins have to worry about? Are there any potential free agents that the Bruins have to try to sign back, or are there are they lower-level free agents that can be replaced out on the open market?
Well, they've got a couple of different scenarios. You know, they've got David Pastrnak as a restricted free agent, and certainly he's due for a healthy raise coming off what he did this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, Dominic Moore's an unrestricted free agent. John Michael Lyle's unrestricted. You know, just a guess on my end, they probably move forward from both of those players. But I think on my end of it, Kevin, they need more, you know, they need more up front. They need more depth. And, you know, maybe they look to the trade route, or they look to go out and sign somebody in the open market. You know, if you look at that left side on David Krejci's line most of the season, it was a revolving door from, you know, Drew Stafford after the trade deadline. They had Peter Cehlárik up there. Matt Beleski was in there a little bit.
Yep.
You know, there was just, they never really were able to find an answer. So I do think, you know, and if you look at it, I think Don Sweeney touched on this after the season. Their lack of depth as they move forward was something that, and then you throw the injuries into it, really kind of caught up to them. So, you know, I would hope they'd be active in the free agent market as best they can to try and add to the depth on this roster as much as they want. I think younger players to take a bigger piece of the pie, for lack of a better way to put it. I also think it would behoove them to add a player or two that are proven at the NHL level.
You had mentioned David Pastrnak, and I've heard, you know, everybody listens to, you know, the two sports stations in town, and David has been brought up in the fact that, you know, he doesn't want to go. We have both sides really want to, you know, keep the conversation going. How can the Bruins spend to keep him here without jeopardizing and being in a situation that they were under Peter Chiarelli, when you were, you know, about to breach that, you know, the cap?
Yeah, I think they'll be okay in that area. You know, they're in pretty good position cap-wise now. I mean, it's, you know, they had to, if you remember, they moved the Mark Savard's contract
right.
A couple of years ago. And, you know, so Don Sweeney had to make some, I think, some difficult decisions, you know, along the road here in terms of freeing up some money and getting out of these cap problems that he had. So I think they'll be okay under Pastrnak. I mean, you know, then the case is, what are they, you know, money wise, what's he looking at? You know, is he looking at $5 million a year, $5.5 million a year, $6 million a year? You know, that's kind of to be determined. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he has any real desire to go anywhere else. You know, he's a restricted free agent, so I think he wants to be here and play here. And why wouldn't you? I mean, he had a great year last year here, and I think they look at him as certainly a building block going forward. I don't think there's much question about that. So, yeah, and then it's just a case of, from a financial standpoint, where does this shake itself out? But I do think, you know, they'll be able to kind of figure that out. But as I say earlier, Ken, I do think if you look at the playoffs with Pastrnak and Brad Marchand, you know, they were targeted as that series went on, even late in the regular season. And a lot of that was teams keying on Pastrnak and Marchand because of the lack of depth that Bruins had in other areas. So as good as those two guys were in the regular season, I think they're going to need to add more up front if they're going to make a deeper run next year.
Well, we got a few more minutes with you, Dave. And probably the last thing one of the last couple of things I would ask you is in regards to drafting, maybe needs, and maybe how some of the kids that have been drafted under Don Sweeney, how they're maturing and how soon we might see them up with the big club.
Well, you know, if you look at it, Kevin, I think that they like a lot of what somebody like Jake DeBrusk has done down in Providence this year. You know, and you wonder if he might be somebody that could grab a roster spot next year. As I mentioned, you know, Jacob Forsback back at Carlson out of BU.
Yep.
I think they expect him to be a part of it next season. Charlie McAvoy. You know, and then you see with somebody like an Anders Bjork. You know, it's an interesting scenario because he's going into his senior year at Notre Dame. You know, does he go? And, you know, the other piece of that equation is the Olympics next year. And it certainly looks like the NHL is not going to be sending their players over to South Korea. You know, and is Bjork somebody that might, you know, certainly would be a good candidate, I think, to play for the U.S. team? Does he try to do that? And then, you know, play at Notre Dame, finish out his senior year there, and then maybe sign with the Bruins? Or does he take the Jimmy Vesey route, you know, and not sign and you know, go to unrestricted free agency in the summer? But, you know, I think that's kind of getting ahead of it a little bit. But he's had, you know, a terrific career at Notre Dame, especially this past year. So I think all those guys you kind of look for, you know, where does Zach Senyshyn fit in this? Where does Jake Zaboral fit in this? They were first-round picks when the Bruins had their three first-rounders back in 2015. I think those are all players to keep an eye on as they kind of move forward. And I guess the other position would be, you know, the backup goaltending spot. Dane McIntyre's had a great year down in Providence. He had kind of a mixed results up in Boston, but, you know, that's an area that they want to certainly solidify after the past few years where Anton Hudobin was good late in the year this year, but, you know, the first three quarters of the year was shaky, and that kind of was an ongoing problem for them. So, yeah, certainly some areas of need as they move forward, no question about it, after taking a good step forward this year.
And then my final question, what does Dave Gosher do to recharge the batteries for the next season? You're going to be doing some work. We're going to hear you on the airwaves, maybe doing some fill-in work. What do you got for plans?
Yeah, a little bit of I get a little bit of work coming up, Kevin, on Westwood One Radio. I was lucky enough to they asked me to do one of the conference finals here coming up on Westwood One. I think it's going to be the Western Conference. I'm not sure of that just yet. That hasn't shaken itself out yet, but you know, that'll be a lot of fun. And if it's not Bruins games, then, you know, playoff games are you know, they're the most fun to do. So going to do that here coming up over the next couple of weeks, and then after that, as the sports hub in Boston needs me, I fill in here and there. They're doing pretty good without me filling in on some of their shows. So they but as they need me, I'll kind of sprinkle some stuff in over the summertime. But other than that, it's sit at the beach a little bit, maybe try to improve the golf game a bit, but, you know, a chance to kind of, I enjoy the away time a lot, too, and, you know, the season is long, and it could be a bit of a grind, so the time away from it is always a good time, too.
No TV time? I mean, you're always, I love seeing you on with Mike Lynch on Channel 5. You do a great job. Any TV time at all?
I don't think so, Devin. You know, I always love talking hockey with Lynchy, and, you know, we jump in and do a fair amount during the season. But I think in the summertime, their energies are focused on, you know, Red Sox, and then once the Patriots get their training camp going here in July, I guess it is, then certainly with all the success they've had, that's where most of their attention lies. But But if he wants me to go in and opine on that, I guess I would drive in. I don't have a problem doing that. That's fine, too.
Excellent. Well, Dave, we want to thank you very much again for joining us. You've done it over the past couple of years, and we definitely appreciate your insight on the Boston Bruins and hope to talk with you down the road somewhere.
All right, Kevin. Always good to be with you. My pleasure. Take care.
We've been speaking with longtime radio play-by-play announcer Dave Gosher, as he's had the call for the Boston Bruins for, I want to say, 16, 17 years? It's been a while, but it's always a pleasure. I'm lucky to have him come on, usually on like an annual basis. We kind of do either a preview to the playoffs, or this particular time we talked after the season was concluded and the Bruins were obviously eliminated in the first round by the Ottawa Senators. But to kind of get a perspective from a gentleman who, you know, that's his, what he does day in and day out, whether it's training camp, preseason, regular season, and then if the team is lucky or fortunate enough, a playoff run. So it's a great relationship, and we definitely appreciate having a Dave on and kind of breaking things down and giving a little bit of insight. Again, this is, he lives and breathes this, so kind of get his insight as to what could be on the horizon for the team is fantastic. And I want to thank all of our guests who appeared here on Monday Night Talk, this week's edition of Monday Night Talk. And we want to thank you for tuning in. As
the South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather, 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield.